Everyone has an opinion when it comes to having a baby and raising kids. Just get the epidural. There's no prize for doing it natural. In my day, we just let the baby cry until they settle themselves down. Have you tried sage oil? And so many more comments, most of them unsolicited. Welcome to the Birth and Parenting Things podcast. My name is Kim, and I've got opinions too. I'm kind of an expert on birth. I've also managed to raise 3 babies into young adults. I'm here to offer evidence-based information, stories, personal experiences on birth, parenting, and everything in between. So let's do this. Hello, it is Kim the Doula, and welcome to Birth and Parenting Things podcast. So, I wasn't going to record today. I was going to skip this week. I thought, nah, I can do this. It's very quiet in my house right now, so now is a good time to do it. I've got cat over there snoring, dog over there snoring. It's wet. It's chilly. It's fall. There's so many leaves falling right now. So I thought, let's do this and then make a cup of tea and watch some TV. So I thought this week I was looking at episiotomies. And episiotomies are scary. I mean, the idea of being cut in the perineum is, gives you the heebies. And this really was one thing that I was certainly worried about when I was pregnant, especially the first time so many years ago. It seemed awful. It seemed horrendous. And it felt like a really ancient practice. And I mean, really, it is. I mean, it kind of is. So basically what an episiotomy is a surgical cut in the perineum where basically these were done as part of mainstream obstetrical care that kind of began in the early 1900s when birth moved from home to hospital. So during that time, really the main draw for people switching to birthing in a hospital was pain management, was using and getting relief from the discomfort of birth. And what that meant at the time was using chloroform. So yeah, chloroform was the pain relief of choice at the time. Can you imagine? So this, and because of that, it basically meant that the birthing parent was under general anesthesia and not actively pushing their baby out. So doctors at this time used forceps to deliver the babies, and in order to help facilitate that and to make space for babies and forceps, they used an episiotomy to create that space. And this type of birth actually was happening where I live in Ontario up until the mid-70s. So you could, I mean, if you lived in this area, you could know somebody who was born that way or know somebody who gave birth that way. However, when the natural birth movement began growing in the early 1960s, birthing parents demanded being awake during their birth and pushing and, you know, being conscious for the birth of their children. Unfortunately, at that time, though, episiotomies didn't go away. And doctors claimed that they helped protect the pelvic floor from damage during the pushing stage. Thankfully, in the 1980s and the early 1990s, several studies were done to determine whether this was even accurate. And the conclusion from all these studies was basically that, nope, it didn't significantly improve pelvic floor function and that these new protocols should be restricted as far as routine episiotomy use. So since then, the episiotomy rates have declined significantly. And at the downtown Toronto hospital where I work, the rate is actually around 5 to 7%. And as someone who's been doing this for and attending births for, you know, 16 years, admittedly, for the last 2.5 of them, I haven't been in person, but I have only seen really maybe a handful, maybe 6. Of the like 170 odd births that I've attended. So it is, however, still, so yeah, so 5 to 7% is sort of where we're sitting in Toronto, in the hospital that I work at. And Episiotomies are still often used when an instrumental delivery, like a forceps or vacuum extraction delivery, is needed. Or if the care provider, they'll sometimes do it if the care provider feels that with the delivery of baby's head, the tearing will be significant. I just did a Kegel, did you? If they feel that this is going to happen, they will often cut a small episiotomy just off to the side to prevent significant tearing into the anus. I had a client one time who was during her, she had a really like kind of lovely, calm, boring, almost, you know, uneventful birth. We just basically walked and we walked and we walked and we walked and we walked. And really every now and then she just kind of stopped, breathed for a little bit, and then we went walking again. And it was really at the point where her husband was actually in the room just reading a newspaper. Like, he was not even with us when we were walking. So then it came time for, they wanted to check her because they were pretty sure she wasn't in labor. So when they checked her, she was actually 9 centimeters dilated, which was mind-blowing. So at that time, we walked a little bit more, and then it became, you know, got to the point where, yeah, like, she was going to need to push. And she actually went into, and I love when this happens, but it was a little bit difficult at this point. She kind of went into herself. She kind of went into that cave brain and, you know, was bearing down with the pressure. But what was happening is, so the doctor came in to do the delivery because the baby was coming, like things were happening very quickly. And the doctor came in and he was watching the monitor, and baby's heart rate was dipping, like significantly dipping. And I can see this is happening too. So I'm like, okay, I'm trying to talk to her, and she spoke Mandarin and English, and her partner only spoke Mandarin. And I was trying to tell her, like, this is how you push. You need to bear down with that pressure. But because she had gone into that primeval, you know, primordial brain part of her, that part of her brain didn't understand English. So I was trying to tell her partner, her husband, what to do, but it just wasn't happening. So then they had actually, as a result, decided to start preparing her for a cesarean birth because this baby needed to be delivered quickly. And the doctor that was there was not her primary physician. So her doctor actually came in at that point. He happened to be in the hospital at the time. His office was actually in the hospital. And he came in and his pager went off as he walked in. And I remember him looking at it going, oh, just tell them I'm at a really uneventful birth. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's not uneventful. And he sat down, the other doctor left, and this doctor sat down, and he actually did speak Mandarin, which was very helpful. So he spoke to her, and she pushed a little. He spoke to her again, and she pushed. He spoke to her again, and then cut a small episiotomy, and spoke to her again, and then she pushed again, and this baby literally flew out. So what was happening, and when I say flew out, actually, let me back up. When I say flew out, I mean that baby caught air. Like, that baby was like jettisoned towards him. And I remember standing there with sort of a med student, I think, beside me. And I was going, oh my God, that was so cool. And I'm looking at this guy, and he was like 12 at the time. But I'm looking at this guy, and he's like just standing there all smug face. I'm going, no, like, dude, you don't understand how incredibly amazing that was. Like, that was so cool. And I'm like, just go be a podiatrist because you clearly don't understand the awesomeness of what just happened. So that episiotomy, I think even though it was small and preventative as far as creating great tear, her perineum was not stretching the way it should have been. It was very, I suppose, very tight. And that episiotomy kind of saved her from, you know, having a cesarean birth for the most part. Now, I'm not saying that all episiotomies are necessary, because there are definitely care providers out there that just like to cut. That's just kind of what they do. I remember at this other hospital we were at, my client was very concerned about episiotomies and had spoken to the nurse about it. And the nurse assured her that this wasn't going to be an issue with the doctor that was there, and told us that there was a doctor in the hospital that wasn't on call at that time, but there was a doctor in the hospital that cut everybody, whether they needed it or not. So what they actually ended up doing when they opened up the kit, she said, I don't know whether this is true or not, but when they opened up the kit, they would drop the scissors on the floor, thus rendering them unsterile and unable to be used. So I don't know. That seemed a little far-fetched, but it was like people were obviously there to help prevent unnecessary episiotomies. So yeah, there are certainly doctors where this could be a problem. And I think it's important that as you work with your care provider, at some point during your pregnancy, during your visits, just write down that you want to talk to them or you want to ask them a question about what their episiotomy rate is. Not the hospital's, but their individual episiotomy rate and what their thoughts are on, episiotomies for primary births, for first-time birthing parents. Like, what are your thoughts on that? And you'll hear some say, oh, well, it's necessary for almost everybody. That's a red flag. Right there, that's a red flag. And there's another answer might be, well, if we feel it's necessary, then, that's maybe not as red of a flag, or maybe, a light pink flag. Or the answer could be, we just see what happens. It's not likely necessary. My episiotomy rate is only blah, blah, blah. And we try not to do them if we don't have to. So that's good. You don't want them to sort of be jumping into that if they don't have to. Now, there are some things that you can do to help possibly prevent an episiotomy. Doing some perineal massage prior to going into labor. And there's articles and whatnot on the internet about this. So doing some perineal massage, which is basically making the muscle of the perineum more pliable, so that as baby's head comes down onto it, it will, because it's more pliable, it will stretch out of the way. I always kind of liken perineal massage as being like yoga for your perineum. So perineal massage can do that. And also having a discussion with your care provider about when they think it's necessary. Taking a prenatal class apparently is a way to prevent unnecessary episiotomies. And that really is just knowing what your options are and feeling empowered to ask those questions of your care provider and ensuring that before you get one, especially if we're talking about a non-emergency situation, getting consent. So ensuring that there is consent for an episiotomy. Now, sometimes, obviously, in the case of an emergency, there might not be time for, asking questions and whatnot, but sometimes there is, and especially if it's not an emergency. I had a client one time that the care provider wanted to do an episiotomy, and I'm not 100% sure why. It didn't seem necessary to me, but I'm not a medical professional, so I'm not gonna comment. But my client said, well, started asking questions. So like between pushes was asking questions, and the care provider was answering, and then they would push, and then there would be more questions than answers, and then they would push. And then after about the third contraction and the third sort of pushing, my client just stopped talking, just stopped asking questions and stopped answering, which meant that consent was never given. So at that point, then the care provider worked just a little bit differently, I suspect, and did a little bit more stretching of the perineum during the pushing stage, and an episiotomy didn't actually end up happening. So as I say, in the case of emergencies, sometimes they got to do what they got to do. But for the most part, if there's time for questions, if there's time for answers, maybe there's some time for different pushing positions, maybe there's time for time. Sometimes just asking for time and giving it a little bit more time to allow the tissues to stretch and stuff can be helpful. So anyways, those are my thoughts on episiotomies. I've certainly had one with my giant big-headed baby who was born by a vacuum extraction. I don't remember it. I don't remember it being significantly painful recovery. If it was, it certainly didn't linger very long in my head. So anyways, so there you go. There is my thoughts on, as I say, on episiotomies. So I thought, my poor dog is over there just snoring and running in his sleep. I thought I would offer up a second ghosty story. So Halloween is on Monday. It's coming up. I'm very excited about it. So I have another little Halloween ghosty story. Same hospital where last week's story was. But in this one, this was the first birth I ever did at this hospital. And again, it was like the section where I ended up getting lost in was like built in the 1800s, mid to late 1800s. So I had done the birth, everything was good, everything was fine, and I was actually leaving. And when I was leaving, because everything was very confused going in, I couldn't remember how I got in, which meant I couldn't remember how to get out. So I ended up being in a stairwell thinking that, okay, I'm just on this floor. If I just go down, I'll be able to find out. I'll be able to figure out where I need to be. But that was the wrong thing to do. I ended up getting into a stairwell. And if you've ever seen, and I'm talking 3 o'clock in the morning, okay, it was like middle of the night. And if you've ever seen a horror movie that's been filmed in a hospital, in an ancient lunatic asylum, penitentiary, anything like that, this is what it looked like. It was the tiled walls with the ancient wooden banisters and like the worn down, foot treads, like, I got in there and I couldn't get back out. The door behind me locked. And I'm like, oh crap, where the hell am I? So I thought, okay, well, I got to get down. I got to go down because I was up. I had to get down. So I started walking down the stairs and I'm panicking as I'm going because none of these doors are opening. And I'm walking down. And at this point, I really have no idea where I am. I don't even know what floor I'm on. And the whole place just has a vibe that is not good. At which point, I'm going down another set of stairs and I'm like, I got to get out of here. And I said it out loud. I've got to get out of here. I cannot be here any longer. And at which point, I don't know if I actually heard it. I don't know if it was maybe just in my head, but there was something that said, go through this door. I wasn't going to go through the door, but something in me said, go through this door. I'm like, okay, none of the other doors have been able to open, so let's try this one. So I push on the handle and the door opens, and sure enough, there I am, on the first floor where I needed to be, and I could see the exit. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I would have kept going down, which would have meant I would have ended up in the basement of the hospital. Jeez Louise. So thank you to the ghostie who pointed me in the right direction and told me where to go. And I appreciate them answering my call for help. But yeah, there you go. There's my other ghosty story for the week. And I hope you all have a spooky, fun Halloween. And I hope you're dressing up or giving out candies and protecting yourselves for the people coming to your house. And that's it. I hope everyone has a good one. And bye.